This is the Africa Debrief by Atlas News. Welcome to the Africa Debrief, where we cover the top regional stories from throughout the week. Starting off, we are delving into the escalating conflict in Sudan, the recent sanctions imposed by the US and EU, and the fragile hope for peace amidst the devastation. Sudan has been embroiled in a brutal civil war since April 2023, with the Sudanese Armed Forces, SAF, and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, RSF, locked in a deadly struggle. The human cost is staggering, with nearly 8 million people displaced and the UN warning of an impending famine. In an attempt to pressure both sides, the US and EU have imposed sanctions on several companies linked to the war effort. The US targeted three companies, including Al-Khalij Bank, which finances the RSF, Al-Fakr Advanced Works, which manages gold exports for the RSF, and Zadna International, a major revenue source for the SAF. The EU sanctions mirrored some of these, targeting Zadna and additional companies involved in weapons procurement for both sides. These sanctions are not new, but they highlight the growing international pressure on Sudan's warring factions. The UN has also been vocal, urging a ceasefire and increased humanitarian access. However, peace talks facilitated by the US, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and the UAE have so far failed to yield any concrete results. Despite the grim situation, there are glimmers of hope. The high-level talks between the SAF and RSF in Bahrain, though unsuccessful in achieving a ceasefire, represent the first direct dialogue between the two sides since the war began. This could be a crucial step towards building trust and finding a path towards peace. However, significant challenges remain. The fighting continues, displacing more people and hindering humanitarian efforts. Additionally, accusations of war crimes, particularly against the RSF, further complicate the peace process. Next, violence erupted between communities in Lakes and Warup states, claiming the lives of 39 people. Clashes erupted over age-old grievances surrounding grazing land, water access, and cultivation rights, echoing similar conflicts that have plagued the region for years. Officials say these clashes occur every year between the Pakam community of Lake State and the Luanigang community of Warup State, often escalating during the dry season due to increased competition for resources. This time, 20 individuals were killed and 36 injured in Lake State, while 19 lost their lives and 17 were wounded in Warup State. This incident is far from an isolated one. South Sudan, which gained independence in 2011, has grappled with ongoing violence and instability. The 2013 to 2018 civil war left deep scars, and intercommunal clashes over land and resources continue to claim lives. Last week alone, over 50 people, including UN peacekeepers, were killed in clashes in the disputed Abyei region, also fueled by land disputes between the Twik Dinka and Nyok Dinka communities. The complex issue of land ownership in South Sudan stems from various factors. Decades of conflict have blurred traditional land boundaries, while unclear legal frameworks and weak governance create an environment conducive to disputes. Additionally, competition for scarce resources intensifies during dry seasons, exacerbating tensions and triggering violence. Addressing this cycle of violence requires a multifaceted approach. Strengthening institutions like law enforcement and the judiciary is crucial to uphold the rule of law and resolve disputes peacefully. Additionally, investing in land demarcation and establishing clear ownership structures can help prevent future conflicts. Furthermore, promoting dialogue and reconciliation between communities is essential to foster understanding and build lasting peace. Next, we travel to Senegal, where the upcoming February 25th presidential election is shrouded in uncertainty due to alleged irregularities and calls for postponement. Tensions are high as questions swirl around the independence of the Constitutional Council, responsible for vetting presidential candidates. This follows the controversial exclusion of two key opposition figures, Ousmane Sonko and Karim Wade. Sonko, seen as a major threat to the ruling party, was disqualified due to a recent defamation conviction, while Wade was barred for holding dual citizenship. Both decisions sparked accusations of bias and manipulation. Adding to the drama, the ruling party itself, alongside opposition figures, supported an inquiry into the council's operations, further fueling speculation about potential postponement. Community Development Minister Therese Fay even publicly advocated for delaying the election, citing irregularities that have ruined the process. This unexpected move raises questions about the ruling party's motives. Are they genuinely concerned about transparency or seeking to buy time due to fears of losing? With official campaigning set to begin on February 3rd, a decision on a possible delay needs to be made swiftly. Another wrinkle emerges with Sonko's chosen successor, Basiru Diomaye Diakar Fay. Despite being approved as a candidate, he remains in detention, raising concerns about unequal campaigning opportunities. His release request has been denied, adding to the confusion and frustration surrounding the entire process. Senegal's upcoming election holds immense importance for the nation's future. However, the current climate of uncertainty and accusations threaten to undermine its legitimacy and stability. Now we shift our focus to Somalia, where a glimmer of hope shines as the African Union Transition Mission in Somalia, ATMIS, completes its second phase of troop withdrawal. Following last year's initial withdrawal of 2,000 troops, this marks a crucial step towards the ultimate goal: full Somali control of its security sector by 2028, as outlined in the Somalia Security Development Plan. This plan, backed by the UN, AU, and EU, charts a six-year course for security self-reliance. Recent achievements are undeniable. Joint operations with the U.S. have seen significant gains against the militant group Al-Shabaab, while political stability paved the way for Somalia's entry into the East African Community, unlocking potential for regional collaboration. Additionally, the UN arms embargo lift allows Somalia to acquire necessary equipment to further bolster its security. Economically, debt relief provided by international lenders is a major win. Somalia's debt burden has been reduced from a staggering 68% of GDP to a manageable 9%, opening doors for economic recovery and growth. While challenges remain, these developments paint a hopeful picture for Somalia's future. The AU withdrawal signifies trust in the nation's capabilities, and ongoing international support paves the way for continued progress. Returning to Sudan, sources have revealed that high-level officials from the Sudanese military, SAF, and the Rapid Support Forces, RSF, held three private meetings in Bahrain during January. This development, kept from the public eye until now, offers a surprising twist amidst the seemingly intractable conflict. The talks, attended by representatives from the U.S., Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and the UAE, aim to find a path towards a ceasefire and peace deal. While details remain scarce, the mere occurrence of these discussions signifies a potential shift in dynamics. However, the path forward remains precarious. Despite positive initial steps, including bringing top leaders together, no concrete breakthroughs have emerged. A ceasefire, let alone a peace deal, seems distant. Further talks are planned, but their timing and potential success are uncertain. Now in South Africa, we delve into the ongoing saga surrounding the Economic Freedom Fighters, EFF, and their exclusion from the upcoming State of the Nation Address, SONA. On February 1, 2024, the Western Cape High Court upheld the decision to bar six EFF members of Parliament, MPs, from attending SONA. This decision stems from an incident in February 2023, where party leader Julius Malema and five others disrupted President Cyril Ramaphosa's address by attempting to storm the stage. Following the incident, the Powers and Privileges Committee imposed a one-month suspension on the six MPs, effectively barring them from SONA 2024. This ruling also mandated them to issue apologies to the President, House Speaker, and the South African public. The EFF vehemently opposed the decision, arguing it aimed to silence dissent and prevent them from holding the president accountable. Spokesperson Sinawo Tambo emphasized that Ramaphosa's final SONA should not be peaceful due to their absence. Parliament, however, defended the ruling, highlighting the EFF's unrealistic timeframes and late filings during the legal challenge. They further maintained that the suspension serves as a consequence for their disruptive actions in the previous year's SONA. This situation presents a multifaceted issue with no easy answers. On one hand, the EFF argues their exclusion stifles their ability to fulfill their parliamentary duties and hold the president accountable. On the other hand, Parliament upholds the need for disciplinary measures to maintain order and decorum within the legislative body. The public discourse surrounding this event is largely divided along partisan lines. Supporters of the EFF view the ban as an attack on democracy and free speech, while others perceive it as a necessary consequence for disruptive behavior. Finally, we look to Kenya's planned deployment to Haiti, a mission shrouded in legal challenges and driven by a nation in dire need. President William Ruto's recent announcement to push ahead with the deployment, despite a court rejection, highlights the complex web of diplomacy, legal hurdles, and desperation that defines this situation. Haiti, grappling with escalating gang violence and a deteriorating security situation, requested international assistance in 2022. The UN-backed mission, led by Kenya with contributions from other African nations, aims to combat these rampant gangs and restore stability. However, the path to deployment has been riddled with legal obstacles. Kenyan courts have repeatedly struck down the mission, citing concerns about the constitutionality of deploying forces outside the country and the lack of public participation in the decision-making process. Despite these setbacks, President Ruto remains determined. He expects Haiti to submit a formal request soon, paving the way for a bilateral route as suggested by the court. This would essentially bypass the need for parliamentary approval, potentially expediting the deployment. The mission enjoys international backing, with the UN and the US, through a substantial financial contribution, providing crucial support. This highlights the gravity of the situation in Haiti and the international community's recognition of the need for intervention. Haiti's dire situation cannot be overstated. The assassination of President Jovenel Moise in 2021 created a political vacuum, further fueling gang violence and plunging the nation into deeper chaos. Homicides have skyrocketed, and kidnappings are commonplace, creating a climate of fear and instability. While the mission aims to address these issues, public opinion in Kenya remains divided. Concerns about the safety of deployed officers, the potential for mission creep, and the financial implications are valid considerations. The success of President Ruto's maneuver and the ultimate fate of the mission remain uncertain. Legal challenges, public reservations, and the complex political landscape in Haiti all pose significant hurdles. This has been the Africa Debrief by Atlas News. Thank you for listening.